This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. And here is where we talk with knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs that try to help them. Today, we're going to try to answer the questions how technology can enhance a person's performance and their mental awareness. And the topic is peak performance for the brain. And my guest is Dave Seaver. Hi, Dave. Good afternoon. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Good afternoon, Lon, and it is indeed my pleasure to be here with you.
Okay, well, this is going to be a fascinating program. Now, Dave graduated as an engineering technologist, but eventually got involved in designing biofeedback devices. His company, Mind Alive Incorporated, is researching and refining audio-visual entrainment, also known as AVE, for helping people for relaxation, treating anxiety, depression, pain, cognitive decline, etc. So, sounds like you've got an amazing device there, Dave.
Thank you.
So, well, what are some of the problems that modern society has that maybe our parents didn't have that that need some help? Yeah, let's talk about the issues people face.
Well, as you know, attentional disorders, learning difficulties, all that are skyrocketing over the last 50 years. And there's a lot of contributing factors to that. There's often malnutrition. There's pesticides, herbicides in our soil that are causing mental issues. There are we are so overstimulated nowadays that we with stimulation that 100-fold of what our grandparents would have experienced. And so between nutritional issues, toxic stuff and sensory overload, those are certainly part of the problems that contribute to learning difficulties nowadays, for sure.
Okay, yeah. Well, there's a lot of things going on, and it's always been stressful, but it seems to be going faster and faster and faster. It has been in my lifetime. And so you've come up with some approaches, and there's a whole industry. There's a number of different approaches, and that sounds like what you have is pretty sophisticated. So how did you get involved in the brain enhancement technologies? As I said a little bit before, there's a number of approaches to it, and we want to hear more about the general thing, the general industry, but specifically about what you've come up with. So how did you get involved? A little bit of your personal story.
Sure. Well, I got into purely by accident. I was building or designing a research lab for TMJ dysfunction at the University of Alberta. TMJ is temporomandibular joint, so it's basically where your jawbone connects to your skull. And a lot of people have tension there. They have muscle spasms and pain and headaches and all that neck spasm associated with jaw clenching and bruxing and all that stuff. And some of that is because of, poorly fitting dentition, but certainly a lot of it is stress related. And while I was working there and designing this research lab, I started to run our patients through. I ran 500 patients through a basic psych test. And almost all of our patients were young moms. They had two toddlers, still a reasonably new marriage, usually under 10 years. And this was in 1983, 84, 85, 82 to 86, roughly in that range. And when I ran 500 of these moms through the psych testing, which dentists never do, of course, dentists were just giving everybody splints, discovered that the price of oil was directly correlated with jaw tension and jaw pain. And in Alberta, we have more oil than Saudi Arabia. You've heard of the tar sands up here.
Oh, yeah.
but it's expensive to extract. And so when oil was at $15 a barrel, many people were in fear of being laid off, getting wage rollbacks, and so on. And that translated into arguments with spouse and financial uncertainty. Both of those factors precipitated TMJ pain by 3 to 6 months. And in 1988, when OPEC put an embargo on oil and it jumped to $30 a barrel, suddenly we had very few patients anymore. So interesting how – pardon?
Oh, the stress just went away. That's job-induced or fear.
Absolutely. It was economically induced stress, and it showed just how pervasive and how can just get you without even realizing it's happening. So during that time, while I was building this research lab and treating all these patients at the university – we had sort of a reputation, me and Dr. Norman Thomas, who was the professor I was working with. We did a lot of sort of mad scientist things, and
that sounds like you had a lot of fun, maybe too much fun.
Well, we did some pretty crazy things, yeah, and it was all fun. I'll give it that. And there were times, you know, when we'd have 15, 20 electrodes on long 3-foot wires dangling all over our faces that would take, you know, an hour or two to get on, and we're doing studies and we didn't want to take them off. So we'd unplug them from all the gear. We'd go down for lunchtime into a ponytail and go down for lunch. And as a result of us walking around with all these wires dangling off our heads and faces, we kind of got this reputation as being a little bit on the Nazi side, I guess, or mad scientist side for sure. And an instructor in performing arts had heard about us, and he was having real issues with his students struggling with stage fright. And he was actually the one who put me on to audiovisual entrainment. He had heard about flashing lights and pulsing tones. There was sort of this underground kind of grassrootsy movement in a little bit here, a little bit there throughout the world, people experimenting with flickering light. Anyway, he'd asked me if I could design a machine for him. And actually, it took me – I started that in the fall of 1984 and didn't finish it till the end of June, early July in 1985. So it's almost been 30 years now since I designed the first machine. I was only going to build two, one for him and one for me, because it took forever to design it. It was very complex in those days before microcontrollers were invented and stuff. So anyway, he started using it on his students, and he was very pleased with his results. And but I needed something more scientific.
Was that what you referred to as David 1, or as yet to come in the story?
Yeah, that was the David 1. Oh, that's a little story behind that, too. I was going to call it NeuroStim or NeuroSync, something like it had a brain kind of a techie name to it. Mm-hmm. but he wanted to name it something else. He said that would kind of make me feel honored. And after a couple of weeks of thinking about it, he came back and he said, let's call it the David. And I go, geez, no. No, thanks. I don't want to do that. I think NeuroStim or something sounds a whole lot better than that. He says, well, I gave it some thought. He says, David stands for Digital Audio Visual Integration Device. So we're using digitally generated audio visual stimulation to integrate brainwaves. And I thought, just kind of clever. And I called myself David in those days, so I changed my name to Dave, sort of. So after that, so not everybody would be phoning me asking about the David. what happened is in 1988, I started using it on our TMJ patients with severe pain, and immediately.
What's TMJ?
Oh yeah, temporal mandibular joint. That's the joint in the skull between the skull and the mandible. Mm-hmm. People often get pain in there that's stress-related, stress-induced. It can be induced by, say, poor occlusion or poor dentition. Dentists trigger it somewhat if they don't make their fillings right, or if they give you bad caps, they can trigger it too. But a lot of it is stress-related. So anyway, I took our 10 worst TMJ patients and put them on the gear in 1988, and I was completely blown away that in In 10 minutes, they were more relaxed than all the biofeedback in the world could have done for their jaws. Boy, they were relaxed. And they had hand warming. And hand warming is very significant because you've heard of these stories of meditators being able to sit in cold rooms with Marines, and their Marines are all shivering and the meditators are nice and toasty. Mm-hmm. When you get into this really deep meditative state, which is scientifically it's called parasympathetic activation, You have vasodilatation, and you can stay very, very warm. And they showed that, and all their pain went away completely for like 3-4 days. So we were super excited about it. Norman Thomas presented on it in England and had it published in a journal. Then I started thinking, you know, this light and sound stuff, which I thought was maybe kind of quackery, it might be legit science. So I started digging around in the archives at the Health Sciences Library, and discovered that in 1934, Adrian and Matthews discovered you could drive brainwaves with flashing lights. And then after that, there were dozens of studies done into the late 30s and 40s looking at lights and tones and so on, and driving brainwaves with it. You could drive up beta waves or alpha waves or theta waves, whatever you want. And thousands of studies were done through those times, looking at brainwave driving. That science has been so proven now, there's absolutely no dispute in it. But no one looked at the psychological side of it. Does it improve, your ability to do academics, or does it make you more relaxed, or does it, make you more excited? No one ever looked at that. And then a couple of key players came out in the 50s, and one was W. Gray Walters, out of England, who ran several thousand people through on strobes and had them record all their subjective experiences, how they felt. Did they feel euphoric? Were they dreamy? Were they this and that? But the real cool study came from a guy who was named William Kroger. And William Kroger was an American physician. And in the Second World War, they were having a real problem with their radar operators. And what was happening is the radar operators on the battleships and even on bomber planes, they would drive their battleship or their bomber plane straight into enemy territory, had no idea they were in enemy territory till they were getting shot at. And the commanders would come back and say to the radar guys, "What the hell's the matter with you people? You should have seen the guy coming on the screen." Well, the radar guys were seeing the enemy coming on the screen, but those old-fashioned radars would blip. They didn't hold the image like they do nowadays, like modern radars do. And they would blip, and they were trancing out the operators. So they would completely watch the enemy come on stream, but they're in such a deep hypnotic trance, they never did anything about it. And so Kroger realized that he could spin a machine, which he called the brainwave synchronizer. And he spun that in about 1957, and they were selling it. Him and a guy named Sidney Schneider were promoting them and doing studies on the whole idea of audiovisual entrainment back in the 50s, and they looked at hypnotic induction for dentistry, for gastrointestinal pain, and for surgery as well. Because in the 60s, 50s and 60s, if you had to get any kind of major surgery, anesthesia was a very poor science back then. And you had probably about a 20% chance of dying from the anesthesia. So they found that if they could put people on the entrainment at an alpha wave frequency, they could cut their anesthesia in half and therefore, have much better rate at not killing you with the anesthesia. So some of these studies had been done, and there were other studies done on altered states of consciousness, a few here, some on creativity, and so on and so forth. And so I collected probably 30, 40 studies throughout the early 90s. Late 89, 90, through about a two-year span, which definitely demonstrated that audiovisual entrainment was indeed real science and it wasn't quackery at all. A lot of these studies were pretty small. But, blinking lights and pulsing tones do look like a lot of nonsensical stuff. And so I've been really proactive at trying to prove it is a valid science, and I've spent over $250,000 myself funding studies of different types. We have 24 studies done on the David systems at the moment, covering attention, learning, seniors, balance, like seniors with risk of falling, depression, all kinds of stuff now. And we've got attention deficit disorders. All that's been the studies have been done. And we've got at least half of them anyway published in journals. at the moment. And clearly what I thought was maybe nonsense has actually turned out to be good, solid science.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm a little bit familiar with that. About 10 years ago, I ran across one that, along this general area, they just use audio tomes. It was out of Beaverton, Oregon, I think it was, called Centerpoint. But yeah. I've used that, and it's been helpful. It helped me with my insomnia and relaxation. It was promoted largely as a meditation supplement or meditation technique. But I've heard several others on the audio especially, and I'd heard references to the visual. So what you've done is you put it together, both the visual. Well, I imagine visual. Wouldn't that be like back in the 70s, strobe lights were real popular, and sometimes people get mesmerized by them?
Yes, yeah, certainly. Yeah, we've certainly massaged the technology greatly since those days. Strobe lights had their side effects that were not always so welcoming, but we've made our stuff very safe and very effective. And the lights actually do about 2/3 of the work. They do drive at least twice the brainwave that audio does.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, how does it work? How does audio-visual entrainment work? What's going on in the brain? Could you give a little bit of background on that?
Yeah, four quick things happen in the brain. One is that very quickly the brain waves start to change to track the frequency of your stimulation. So let's say you want to stimulate someone for meditation, which is typically in the 8 to 10 hertz range. So 8 to 10 flashes per second. We do what's called a sine wave modulated flash whenever we do meditation, because strobes make harmonics, and you can actually trigger an anxiety response if you use strobes or what we call square wave stimulation. But sine waves mean the lights kind of turn on and off more gently. They don't turn on instantly or off instantly. It's kind of a gentle on and off, and that doesn't make harmonics. So anyway, yes, you can put someone into an alpha state at about 8 to 10 hertz. You can put someone into relaxed attention in the 12 to 15 hertz range. You can make someone very actively attentive in the 15 to 20 hertz range. You can put people into deep, states of reverie in the theta range, where they're very dreamy and sometimes very creative. And it happens very, very quickly. So that's one of the first things that happens, is the brain waves start to change with the flashing lights and pulsing tones. But a couple other things happen, especially on the stress, anxiety side, depression side, is that when people are anxious and so on, their brain is racing. It's doo-doo-doo. They just got chatter that never stops, and they can't shut it off because they're flooded.
Is that conscious or unconscious or both?
It's often both. People often realize their heads are racing. They're often breathing fast. They have cold fingers. They have tense muscles. And that can happen just from driving down the freeway. Think of a time when you've been driving down the freeway and someone, almost cut you off and almost hit your car. And then maybe you gave them a little toot on the horn and suddenly they were ready to stop and get out and have a fight or something like that. And it just shakes you up, can shake you up for like a day or two when that kind of a thing happens. Or if you're writing exams, and you're just so nervous, and like all these kids writing exams at university are just, they're whacked out on coffee for days prior to the actual exam. Even if they're going to do well, they still get all stressed out and worried. And worry and stress are huge amongst college students. And what other things? There's financial, there's bills, there's watching the news, there's worrying about guns, there's all kinds of things. I can certainly say, as an observer, probably in Canada, whenever I see, if ever a Republican gets elected, you see all kinds of Democrats going into depression for a while. And when Democrats get elected, you can see Republicans going into depression for a while.
We take our politics seriously here at times.
Absolutely. Yep. So all these factors spin into daily dysregulation. Mm-hmm. And so you can use the entrainment to get out of that. So the first thing that happens is the brainwaves start to change. The second thing happens is you dissociate from your thoughts, because most of these thoughts people are having are all anxiety producing. They're putting us into what's called the sympathetic state, which is like a flight or fight state. So we have rapid breathing, we have tense muscles, we have cold fingers, we're flooded with cortisol. We can't learn well or function well. Usually we're impatient and we're reactive. And just within 5 minutes, you can go into a deep dissociated state, very much like a Zen meditator would do with several years of practice, believe it or not. The third thing that happens very quickly is that cerebral blood flow really starts to go up. And stress shuts down cerebral blood flow. And that's also with cognitive decline in seniors. It's with ADHD kids, any kind of depression, all kinds of dysfunction or emotional or mental or cognitive dysfunction involves hypoperfusion or low levels of cerebral blood flow. And you need to get those up. Mm-hmm. You need to get that up. And stress certainly knocks it down. So it drives up cerebral blood flow. And the other thing it does, which is very important, is that as soon as you're in a stress, the second you feel a fear response, whether it's you're walking down a back alley and you see someone pop out from behind you, or whether it's you see a bill for a whole bunch of money and you're like, how am I going to pay this? Or you discover some other terrible event is happening in your life, or someone just got hit by a car, or you know what I mean? There's hundreds of things that can happen. Sure. The second you go into a stress response, it takes actually 1 to 2 seconds, all your serotonin crashes. And serotonin is a neurotransmitter that makes us feel relaxed and happy and easygoing and sociable and things like this. And it completely crashes in a couple of seconds. And generally speaking, norepinephrine, which is the brain's adrenaline, really shoots up. And there's all kinds of people out there that when they feel threatened for whatever reason, they overreact and they become aggressive and violent. But for the rest of us, we just get really shaky and nervous and we feel exhausted after the day. So entrainment drives up, in 30 minutes, it'll drive up serotonin 23% in a study that was done by Sheely in 1980s. And it also reduced... It also drove up endorphins by about 13%. Endorphins, too, are often the neurotransmitter that helps with pain. So we do use this gear for helping people who have discomfort from pain and so on. But it also gives you a better sense of well-being at the same time. And
I've heard those referred to as the pleasure center or the pleasure parts of the brain.
Yes, serotonin, yes. Dopamine, and endorphins are all play out sort of the happy side of the brain, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it sort of sounds like somebody comes to you and it's almost, well, menu comes to mind. I don't think it's really that, but it's the question, how would you like to feel today, or what do you need to be, or how does that work on that end of it? And then I'll get into a little bit more detail. How does it work on that end? Somebody comes in, is it a menu type of thing, or what do you do and analyze?
On our gear, we have them broken into 5 categories. We have an energizer category, which boosts beta, but it also suppresses alpha. And you could use this as a direct coffee replacement if you want to. It can really clear a foggy head in the morning. We have also brain booster categories, which are using what we call beta SMR. Basically, it's a faster beta and a slower beta. And it's made to calm you down physically, but sharpen you up mentally. And then there's a meditative section. There's a sleep section, and there's also what we call a happy section. When people fall into depression, the left frontal lobe starts to shut down. And on an EEG, you can see this by a whole bunch of alpha waves coming out of the left front of your, just below your hairline, about 2 inches from the center line of your head is where kind of your happy center is. And it's been well documented. And when people fall into depression, that part of the brain shuts off. And when you do an EEG on them, you'll see a whole bunch of alpha waves coming out of that spot. So we've got a protocol that is made to get rid of those alpha waves on the front, on that front left. And your front right side of your brain is your fear, unhappy, stress, guarded, or runaway behavior in a sense, or retreat behavior. And we put alpha waves into that side to settle it down. So basically, we boost up the happy and we settle down the sort of the distress portion of the brain and balance them back out again. And that is so common with depression and post-traumatic stress and all that kind of thing.
Okay, well, let's get into the students and the sort of the academic and the whole thing. So can this, or how can this help students, like, say, students have learning problems, say, just Something's not working. Auditory processing, not paying attention, dyslexia, or something like that. How could it help that?
Yes. Well, it does. It does indeed, yes. Couple of things, too, I should mention. I'm big on nutrition. I consider nutrition to be neurotechnology. And when people come to me with cognitive issues or learning issues, I always get them on liquid minerals. I get them on omega-3s, get them on a sulfur mixture. And often you get them on iodine as well, because a lot of learning issues. People are deficient in iodine, so their thyroid slows down a little bit, which also slows down their brainwaves. Then they can't pay attention and learn well. But aside from that, there's a few main issues basically with learning. One is, of course, attention or concentration and memory. You have to have concentration to absorb the material when the teacher is teaching it. Then you have to have memory to assimilate it so it's retained. The other part of learning, of course, is to be able to hold it long term and boost your grade point average. And I guess a third part of all of that is stress and worry. If you have stress and worry, you cannot learn. You cannot learn in the presence of stress hormones like cortisol and so on. So the gear handles all of it simultaneously, which is really a nice thing about it. And we've got a study on boosting grade point average in college students. We have another one on 78 students showing that it markedly boosts memory and concentration compared to a control group. And out of Texas in Austin 5 or 6 years ago, we did another study comparing entrainment to expressive writing and worry exposure, which are kind of standard psychological techniques for students undergoing worry and stress in college. And they found that using the audiovisual entrainment was more effective than the other techniques that they use for reducing worry. And because it's so easy to use, they had the best compliance and the fewest dropouts.
Okay, well, what's the range? The range of the things. And another part of that question would be, what are the limits? Are some conditions such that it's not responsive to this approach?
You know, there are a few conditions that don't respond. Like, for instance, with sleep. Entrainment, generally speaking, is very effective for sleep onset because people who cannot fall asleep usually have all kinds of stresses and anxieties running through their head and they can't shut it off. But we have found that people who wake up in the middle of the night at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning for no good reason at all, and they'll say, I've got no stress, my life is wonderful, money's fine, I just wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm one of those people. And for me, what I have been finding is that vitamin D and omega-3s were probably the best solution for me. And we find, generally speaking, for people who have what we call middle-of-the-night awakenings, entrainment does not work very well for that at all. It's usually you have to take a nutritional approach to that. Other than that, you know, there are really no other applications we really have issues with. One thing, if a person has a history of seizures, I would use it with caution. Sine waves probably will never ever trigger one, which is what we typically stimulate with in our equipment. But nonetheless, there is a bit of a risk there, so you should use it with an appropriate therapist who can do an EEG simultaneously, just to make certain that you're fine. Odds are, even all the research shows that, you know, in terms of visual induced seizures, for the most part, there's never any harm caused by it, but we just don't want to see that happen anyway.
Well, I understand, and on the strobe light sometimes, not very common, but occasionally a strobe light back in the 70s would cause a seizure.
Exactly, and that's the square wave stimulation, which is the most effective way of triggering a seizure. And that's why we say we also stay away from the square waves on our own equipment, because we don't want to take that risk, so we don't use them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's talk about some of the other problems students might have. I think you'd mentioned ADHD, anxiety, depression, those things. Anxiety has become big lately in the schools that I work with, and a lot of schools are even designed to specifically help kids with anxiety, because some of them have really high anxiety for multiple reasons. So, use some examples of some of the things you've worked at. You know, if you can think of some case studies, that would be good to illustrate what you're doing, what happened, and how you approached it.
Oh, sure, certainly, yes. There are certainly four studies on special needs students now. Our biggest one had 200 kids in it from 7 schools throughout Minnesota. And anxiety, depression, those are big factors. I could give you an example, I think, of a girl I was working with who had severe anxiety. And, of course, it's important, you know, often when they come to see me, they've already been to all the doctors, all the shrinks, on all kinds of meds. They've had no results at all.
You're sort of a last chance.
Yeah, and they're like, how are you going to help me if real professionals cannot?
Mm-hmm.
But typically we do, and it's always my goal to make sure that they've had a profound experience the very first time they're in my office, so they get it emotionally, And then they'll have a sense of hope instead of hopelessness and helplessness, which is usually where they come in. And so anyway, yeah, I can remember this girl who had a father who was really tough on her and always put her down, thinking that if he kept putting her down and telling her what a failure, that maybe she would go, hey, I'm tired of this. And then she would pull up her bootstraps and get better. But it didn't work that way. It just, her self-esteem kept sliding and sliding and sliding. And when she came in, she was a real mess. She was afraid of everything. She was dating a terrible guy who was just mean to her. Go figure, you know. So we had her on the gear, and immediately she was so profoundly relaxed. And I often run biofeedback with this so I can show them later their muscle, their breathing, their heart rate, and things like that. I can show them just how relaxed they got. Well, she came off of that and was so completely relaxed that she actually had her first smile in like 6 months. And sent her home with the unit, and she was using it at home, and we were measuring her on the depression index. And she went from severely depressed to very mild depression within 2 months, despite being at home still with her father. And by the third month, she was no longer clinically depressed at all. But a whole bunch of things also spun from that. One is that she was getting her self-esteem and her confidence back. She decided it was time to end the relationship with this deadbeat boyfriend who was, again, kind of abusive like her father was. But also she had real fear driving, especially in winter, because we have a lot of snow and ice on our highways in winter. And she'd be so scared. She was at the point now where she could not drive in the winter. She would stay home. She was housebound in the winter. She was so afraid to leave her own home. And she was afraid she'd have a panic attack. And even walking, she was starting to get it. And so anyway, after 3 months went by, all that panic, all that lack of confidence, everything changed around, and she became a beauty. And you can see when people start to use the gear and they start to let the stress go, they suddenly start getting younger and younger and younger. And by time 2 months go by, you think you're dealing with a new person. And she just transformed from someone who looked like an old lady, even though she was only about 20-ish, to someone who looked beautiful and wonderful and did look like a young lady again. And that happens all the time with my clients. They get younger and younger and more bright and beautiful, and they start shining after a couple months as that stress goes down. So anyway, it wasn't long after that, and she was so proud of herself. She came into my office, and she was driving again in winter, had a really nice new boyfriend, had a very stern talk with her father about this, and before she was always too afraid to talk to her father about this. And she got a new job and was going back to school as well, or had enrolled for school, all the things she never would have done. Without the technology, she probably would have ended up with this deadbeat boyfriend, would have been pregnant, and would have been a mom with depression who would have also probably, you know, mismanaged her own children.
Okay, well, that's impressive. Now, one thing I didn't mention earlier, because I was having some troubles with it, but the chat function is working. So those listeners, there's a chat function down on the lower right-hand side, and if you want to ask a question, we can pass it on to David and see what he says. And I finally got it working. So one of the things is insurance cover this procedure? Is this procedure covered by insurance is what the
You know, sometimes it is. If a clinician, like a doctor especially, puts it through as a recommended therapy, insurance will often pick it up. The VA centers are buying these right now in pretty good volumes for war vets coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. The Semper Fi Fund for Marines is picking up, quite a few devices monthly. But standard insurance, and if you're thinking of the Medicaid? I don't think they're picking any of this up at this time. They might be. I don't always know. We have most of our distributors are clinicians. Most of them are psychologists and some psychiatrists, some chiropractors, and a few medical doctors. But most of them are psychologists, and I don't always know what's going on in their realms.
Okay, well, the questionnaires are getting on. Want to get a little bit down to the basics, and well, one of the questions: are people awake for this when they're going through a session? Are they awake?
No, generally they can be. We have view hole eye sets, and a few of the researchers are doing a lot of cognitive work on kids, eye hand coordination, eye-hand coordination, which you could use for we were using this with an Indy 500 race car trainer, and he would have them wear glasses that you could see through, and they would be in training while they were on the simulators, and he found that they learned exceptionally faster than people not using it. And not only that, but in situations that were like crisis situations, I mean, when you're driving, you know, at 150 or 200 miles an hour, it's in a split second you can be in a crisis situation. And he found that the people using our gear always, almost always handled it properly rather than just going into a panic reaction and smashing up the car. And so fighter pilots, all kinds of people where they have technical jobs that are very demanding could use both eyes closed and eyes open while they're on the gear executing tasks. Or they could do it eyes closed and visualize the task and then actually do that task eyes open. Later on, and we've worked with many athletes, Olympic level athletes, who've done exactly that. use it for both, and we do have protocols in there for that. But for the most part, people are using it eyes closed, and they just close their eyes. They put on the protocol. A lot of people say are using it for inducing meditation to help deal with stress. That's or they're doing it to boost their mood because they're having some depression issues, or maybe they're boosting their mental sharpness as well. Mm-hmm. And that's all typically done eyes closed. And you put on the gear and say the second thing that happens after, as your brainwaves start to change, you dissociate. And you let go of all those thoughts, especially all those negative thoughts and all those feelings, all those tensions. The breath gets really slow, gets rhythmic, gets diaphragmatic. You'll see hands warm up 15 degrees Fahrenheit sometimes. Muscle activity just falls way off, and so does sweat. Like electrodermal measures are very important measures for tension and anxiety as well, and that all falls off very quickly in the 5 to 10 minute range. So they basically trance out when they're on the gear, and we look for that. We want them to trance out, and they go into complete trance. They have no idea, not a thought in their head of what's going on. For a lot of the special needs and attentional kids, often they're oppositional and they fight with their parents a lot. So we just have their parents put the gear on while they're still sleeping in the morning before they wake up. Mm-hmm. And they wake up sharp and bright and nice, and they put their clothes on, they brush their teeth, have breakfast, and they get out the door, and there's no fighting.
Okay, I think you probably one of the questions on the chat was that is this something for self-use? And I gather it is. It doesn't have to be under the supervision of a clinician.
No,
correct?
Not at all. It's very self-driven. Say we have our protocols and categories. You kind of know what category you need to use. We do have a symptom checklist on our website, and you can fill it out, and it'll suggest the category that you use. Mm-hmm. And if you wish, you can certainly work with a clinician. We know clinicians all across the United States and in Canada that you could see. And if you want, person wanted to go with a clinician, some issues you should use it with a clinician, like especially if you have severe depression. You should always be working with a clinician if you have severe depression and find out why you have this severe depression. You can certainly use the gear with it. In fact, I highly recommend it, especially if you have severe depression that's based on life events. Let's say as a childhood, if you were abused a lot and now you're working with a clinician and past memories are starting to come up and starting to flood your head of abusive situations, that can really mess a person up and make them highly stressed and anxious as this stuff comes forth. And so it's really important to use the gear when that kind of therapy is going on so you can re-relax yourself and calm yourself down rather than going into, you know, a crisis and catatonia from discovering things in your childhood. But a lot of people have depression, just I say, because the brains are just dysregulated because of just all these general events in society. The gear will work very well for that all on its own.
Okay. Well, how long does it take, the question on the chat, how long does it take to get results with this? And you touched on that. Could you elaborate a little bit more? Because it sounds like you get sort of instant results, but I presume it takes some time before it was really internalized?
Yes, that is true. Typically, especially on the depression side, the meditation side, you should notice results within the first couple of sessions. Typically, you see pretty profound reactions or responses even in the first session. But when it comes to cognitive things, We generally go by 2 weeks. You should be noticing significant changes in 2 weeks on like impulsiveness, attention, those other behaviors associated often with a slow running brain, like feeling victimized or moodiness or anger. And usually within 2 weeks, you should see a net improvement. But all the studies have shown that you continue to prove, if you use it 2 to 3 times a week, you will continue to improve for about 30 to 40 sessions. And then there's a sort of a plateau at that point, and the improvements will generally not occur anymore. So most kids use this 3, 4, 5 times a week for 2 months or so. Well, 5 times a week for 2 months, and then they will start using it as more of a maintenance basis.
Mm-hmm.
We also really encourage, if it's a special needs child, we really encourage the parents to use the gear too. And the reason why is, you know, if you have a child that has severely special needs, it's obvious and everyone knows it. The parents know it. They give the child extra slack for their and tolerance for their emotional outbursts and their moods and fighting and whatever they do. And they're in special classes at school and so on. The biggest problem are these kids that are fairly normal, but they have mild ADD. So they look like a normal child with a bad attitude. And the parents are always afraid these kids are going to end up in jail. So they get extremely punitive with them and authoritarian and controlling, which adds a lot more to the child's anxiety and stress and so on, because the parents are so overreactive now. And so it's important that if they have a child like that, that they think is mostly just a terrible rotten apple, it's important that the parents use that, because under stress, even if the parents are inducing that stress from being, say, a punitive and authoritarian and everything, not that there's anything wrong with being authoritarian and having controls over your children. I mean, that's important. But they get really excessive and really reactive. And that just causes more stress and anxiety in the child. And stress and anxiety always shuts down the ability to reason and think. And that's what they want their kids to do, is to reason and think so they make proper decisions. And meanwhile, they're stressing their children to the point where they can no longer reason and think, because stress shuts down the frontal lobes where reasoning and thinking and impulse control reside.
So, I think what you're saying there is that if you're going to help the kid, parents need some help to chill out too.
Absolutely. And we've had a couple of cases over the years where the child was very oppositional, and the parents used the gear and the child still got better.
They got better even when the kid wasn't using it.
Even when the kid wasn't using it, because the parents were now being more reasonable. They were talking more. They were trying to more problems, be proactive instead of reactive. And as a result of that extra nurturing and that less reactivity, the child started to respond to that. And some of their parent-induced tensions started to drop, and the child started thinking and responding better.
Wow. Well, that's impressive, because as an educational consultant, I work with parents that have kids who are acting out. And sometimes it looks like the real problem is the parents, and the best thing for the kid is to put them into residential placement so they won't be in that reactive environment as much. That's really intriguing. I'd like to pursue that further at some point.
Sure.
About that, because I know sometimes parents get accused of that and blame the parents on that.
Well, it does happen for sure. And when the parent comes in and says, you know, I just want to beat the tar out of my little kid every second day because I'm so afraid he's driving me nuts, and B, I'm afraid he's going to go to jail. You go, okay, you got to start using this gear.
Yeah, well, I know every parent can relate to that feeling from time.
Absolutely.
At least from time to time.
Yeah, I was a parent of an ADD boy too, or an ADHD boy, and I had those struggles too, and I needed the gear as well. And it's good role modeling too, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, plus it's just good for a person generally, and from what I'm hearing from you and my experience, and generally in some of the other approaches. Is it primarily one-on-one, or are there groups that are doing it, like a school or a classrooms all using it? What's been your experience of what you're finding?
Well, you know, a lot of it is just one-on-one with a clinician or just buying directly from us through our website or something. But I do like group settings. And for instance, Michael Joyce, a clinician, a neurophysiologist in Minnesota, he was instrumental in getting over 70 schools on board using the gear. In fact, the state of Minnesota will actually cover the cost of our equipment, if you're a parent and you submit for it. There's a school out there called A Chance to Grow, and it's a charter, it's not really a school, but it's a charter facility for special needs kids that I work with, and mm-hmm. they can help probably give guidance on that. And I would think that Michael Joyce could also give some guidance on how a parent could run that process. But anyway, 70 schools or so are on board with it throughout the Minnesota, Wisconsin area, or yeah. And they have, were building wooden carts, and we had multiple systems on it that could treat 10 kids at a time. And they would wheel these carts around from classroom to classroom and run the children on them, and you know, do have extensively good results by working a whole school in one go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, would you say it's becoming more mainstream or closer to becoming mainstream? What's been the progress the last few years in your experience? And I'm talking not only your device and things, but other competitors, I guess you could call it, that are using either audio or visual entrainment.
Well, so, you know, I think it's getting less difficult for me to present it. In the past, it seemed like no one had ever heard of neurotechnology. Of course, you know, this is all the decade of the brain, really, and there's so much brain research going on all over the place now. People are sort of attuned to it, even if not very consciously. They sort of have an inkling about some of the stuff that's going on. And in the past, I would have to have the same conversation you and I are having over and over with every single individual I spoke to. Now it seems to be a lot of people have sort of a general understanding of it, and we just sort of talk maybe more about specifics. And if not, I can just send them to my website where I have several articles that have been published over the years, and they can read up there. But I would say that overall the public is opening up to this more and more. But a key to this, of course, I mean, blinking lights and pulsing sounds, tones sound pretty hocus pocus. You know, and that's why I was proactive. When I discovered it was real science, I got very proactive at doing study after study after study and spending a lot of money and proving it's real science so that it wouldn't die as a new age fad. And that is what's hurting the industry at the moment. Almost no other manufacturer out there is investing anything in research at all. And it mm-hmm. needs to be done, especially, like I say, blinking lights don't look that credible.
Okay, well, we're just about run out of time. This is fascinating. Okay. We could go on for another hour easy. But there are several questions in here. How much does it cost? How can they get a hold of you? And things like that. So you have about 3 minutes for, I guess you could call it a commercial break, to talk about Mind Alive and your devices.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Well, actually, yeah, they can just go to the mindalive.com website. There's plenty of research they can read. Just go to the research tab, click on research articles by Dave Seaver, and you can see a whole bunch of articles that have been published over the last 15, 20 years. You can also just email info@mindalive.com. Say that you heard about us on your talk show, and we will throw in a little something extra for that. That's the other way of getting to us. And what was the other question? Oh, the prices. Yeah, we have a few basic units. Yeah, we have a Delight is our sort of basic intro unit. We have one that's a little more specialized called the Smart, and that's dedicated more for college students, sensory-modulated academic readiness device, academic resilience device, Smart. We have one called the Alert, which is geared more for ADHD and so on and learning issues. We also have a Delight Pro, and the Pro combines cranial electrostimulation, which is a whole other topic, and CES, as it's called, also helps with things such as endorphin and serotonin production. It's used also, CES has been used for decades. There's just hundreds of studies on it for pain control, discomfort, helping to, again, cognition, being more relaxed, you know, having a calmer state of mind and being sharper and so on. So a lot of people do buy the fancy unit, but don't have to.
Okay, well, what's roughly the range of the cost?
Oh, yeah, about $300 to about $6.
Okay, and we have one question. We have time for it, I think. Can someone feel better about childhood trauma with this?
Yes, you certainly can. It's been used quite frequently for that. It would be good to work, again, with a clinician on that type of thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're just about out of time. Dave, I really appreciate this. We've been talking with Dave Seaver. A peak performance for the brain, talking about the devices, the audio-visual entrainment, AVE techniques, and one that he does with his Mind Alive. And this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. And I want to thank all of you for joining us, and be sure to come back next week.
Thank you very much for inviting me to your program.
Oh, it's great.